So after last week where we had one episode which was firing on all cylinders and was one of the finest hours of television that the show has given us so far, we have two episodes, The Hunted, and we'll talk about The High Ground in a few minutes, that are
pretty decent.
Okay. And on the one hand, you can look at this as a little disappointing because this is kind of a come down from The Defector.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the other hand, I think you have to look at it from the point of view of the show can have an okay episode now, which is still pretty good.
Well, that was it. I liked both these episodes. They aren't going to make my top five, but they were enjoyable hours of television. And yeah, I guess it seems like the baseline is a lot more higher now.
I liked The Hunted more than The High Ground, which is weird because I remembered liking The High Ground more than The Hunted. And I think both of these episodes are interesting in the sense that, number one, they're both written by women. And the second one is written by Melinda Snodgrass.
Yay.
And the other thing is they're very action oriented. These are two episodes which have a lot of, I mean, The Hunted is basically one long chase sequence in a lot of ways.
O'Brien gets an action sequence in The Hunted.
Yeah.
And Picard gets one in
The High Ground.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We have action Picard, which becomes a running joke much later. and
I liked action O'Brien.
Yeah, I did too. I think O'Brien had some fine moments in this episode. I think one of the things that I think is most interesting about The Hunted is that the show can do pretty much an hour long chase sequence and have it be good and have it be watchable, because I frankly don't think that this is something the show would have been capable of in the first or second seasons.
Well, the thing is, I mean, not only on a level of the action itself, it's well done, it's well directed, you know exactly what's going on, and it is this nice cat and mouse thing. You know that the Enterprise is eventually going to outwit him, but that, you know, they shift the balances. And I liked the moment when Worf came out and tricked him, and then he, you know, threw all the styrofoam blocks on Worf, you know, and all that. Like, that was well done. But we have a group of main characters who we now care very much about and like, for the most part. And
speak for yourself.
Well, for the most part.
Okay.
And we have the villain in this episode is very well characterized and interesting.
But who is the villain?
Well, society, obviously.
That's the question, isn't it?
Well, the antagonist. How about that? Because
all right, that's a better word.
What's his name? You know, is
Roga Daynar.
Roga Daynar. Roga Daynar. Mm-hmm. Daynar is he's a tragic antagonist, very much so, and we want to see him happy by the end, and, you know, or at least we want to see him fulfilled by the end. He has been imprisoned in...
I think he wants to fulfill Troy by the end.
Who doesn't?
I don't. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting because on the one hand, you could say, okay, the show is a little too on the nose because this is Star Trek doing Vietnam.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not really sure that we needed an episode of a television show in 1990...
I don't
to
know.
Tell us that treating Vietnam veterans badly was not a good idea.
Yeah, but it makes sense because the people who were college age and who were fighting, you know, in 1990, were that was the age of the people who were writing and working on the show for the most part.
I guess.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Not really.
People in their 40s weren't working on the show. 30s and 40s.
They were mostly younger than that.
Huh.
I mean, the people writing for the show at this point were like in their, I don't know, early 30s, late 20s. Huh. I mean, they weren't contemporaneous with Vietnam, really.
Okay.
So I'm not really sure why they thought it was necessary to have a Vietnam episode of the show. I don't know. You know, this, it's really interesting because I don't think
where was this around the Gulf War, by the way?
Before, because the Gulf War was 1991.
Okay.
So, you know, I don't know what, you know, the Next Generation, I think we need to talk about the Next Generation in conjunction with the original series, because the Next Generation is certainly a show that does social commentary, but it doesn't do it nearly as much as the original series, I would not say.
Don't have planets as built around this one, you know, prejudice that we have.
Or right. You know. So, you know, the Next Generation is not an episode. The Next Generation is not a show that's going to do an episode like Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, for example.
Yeah.
Right. That would just be entirely too on the nose. This is not a show that's going to do an episode like the one where the planet was overrun with people. The abortion episode. So you know, it's just not as on the nose, generally speaking. But this episode is pretty on the nose and also engages with a problem that I don't think was really a problem at this point. So I'm not really sure why they wanted to do a Vietnam allegory, because it seemed like it was kind of out of time.
I guess it's whatever, right? You know, whoever wrote this, maybe just happened to, you know a homeless dude on the street who was a vet.
I guess, but
I don't think it's bad that, you know, we're saying that we should treat our veterans better. Sure. But what the impetus for this, what the need was, I don't know.
Well, you know, I don't want to get too far down a road of talking about our own personal politics, but I generally have a problem with the let's canonize veterans approach, because, yeah, I don't think that we should treat returning veterans badly, but at the same time, I think there is a general... I have a problem viewing this episode, because I think the way that that attitude has gone went from, we treated returning Vietnam veterans really badly. Yeah. We should not have done that. We also did not give them the support. I think there's an implication here. There's a criticism of the way that we treated, especially returning Vietnam veterans with severe mental problems or severe health problems, badly, and did not give them the support that they needed. And that was definitely a problem. But I have a problem viewing this episode outside of the context in which that sort of attitude has developed, because I think there's definitely a problem with that, in which treating veterans as heroes and treating them as like these returning champions of liberty, I think is an issue, because that's become if you don't support the troops, then you know, if you support the troops, you support the war. It's kind of where I'm going, and it's like there's kind of a moralistic aspect to it that has developed out of that attitude in the past 20 years.
And I don't disagree with that. At the same time, I think all this episode is saying is that yes, we can't, you know, somebody finishes service, somebody does something which is genuinely emotionally damaging. You know, I think there is nobody who disagrees that somebody who does work as a soldier for a while does need some sort of counseling, and some sort of treatment isn't the right word, but they need
they need
some kind of infrastructure and support for going back into normal life.
I mean, I think
they've gone from one very different standard to another, and you can't just make that switch quickly, is what this episode is saying.
I mean, frankly, I subscribe to the theory that if you serve in a war and you don't have post-traumatic stress disorder, then I mean, I think pretty much anyone coming back from a war zone has it to some degree.
And that's fair. And I guess what this episode is saying is, you know, we need to recognize that, and yeah, somebody does need to, you know, the Army does need to have, I guess, a series of social workers working with all veterans, you know, everybody who serves, just when they leave the Army and they go back, you know, to life. Because, you know, people do want to serve for a while and then finish that service, maybe, and then go back and enjoy some of the, you know, some of the country that they fought for. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And I think this show is, you know, this episode is saying that they've denied this to these people, and, you know,
not even that they denied it, but they didn't even try.
Yeah.
And I think that's the more damning aspect.
You have all of these planets who are looking to join the Federation, but don't trust the Federation to help. And the entire point of the Federation is to help. You know, I mean, every time Dr. Crusher is dealing with something medical, she's the first one to point out that, look, you know, we haven't tried these. You know, you're going to talk to one of the biggest networks of amazing researchers. You know, if you put Dr. Pulaski with a full lab team on this problem, you think they're not going to solve it? You know,
well, like, and I think that's the interesting point, though, because, you know, I take your point.
Yeah.
But I also think that, you know, at the very end of the episode, basically the implication there is that the biological elements of it could have been reversed and the psychological elements could have been treated, and they knew that, and they didn't do it.
They kind of half-ass. I mean, he does say kind of like, well,
he flat out says,
he says that, theoretically they could reverse, we've never tried it, but the psychological,
no, he flat out says that they could do it. I remember the line.
He does say that the psychological heal, he doesn't know. The implication is that they just kind of thought the problem... I got the sense they thought the problem was a little too big for them, and they kind of... This was an easier choice. The society is wrong for choosing the... Making the easier choice, but, you know, I think that... I do get the sense that they need a little more research muscle on this than... And maybe that's why they made that particular choice. He talks about this program. Kind of... He talks about how they studied this problem before they implemented it. You get the sense that they figured out how everything would work in the lab, and they were under these two conclusions. And maybe one said, you know, we could delay this project for another 15 years while we figure out a way to reverse it afterwards, or we go to war now. And they figured we need to go to war now, so let's do this. And you get the sense they just kind of dropped it out of the project because this was working fine.
Well, if you tease that out to its logical conclusion, though,
yeah,
when they develop these super soldiers with these biological and psychological conditioning and elements, knowing that they could reverse the biological elements of it, but not necessarily completely reversing the psychological conditioning, and then going forward with it anyway, and then at the very end of it, when the war is over, and they were, you know, deciding that they were going to shunt them off to a colony, they say, and then later on they say that it was causing problems, and so it became more of a prison colony. And then if you sort of extrapolate that out even further, they knew all this.
Yeah.
They applied for Federation membership anyway, hiding it from the Federation. And in effect, you know, they're applying for Federation membership in bad faith.
How many? And we've seen that happen before.
And if anything else, you know, I want to talk about the end of the episode I do think it's one of the more striking ends of any Star Trek episode. That they kind of, I guess, thought that the Federation wouldn't find out or wouldn't care.
I mean, that's very strictly the sense why Picard, you know, leaves them to their own devices and said, you know, maybe in a few years when you figure this out, we'll, you know, be able to talk again. But they don't want someone in the Federation who is this stubbornly dumb. I mean, again, I think it's not that, you know, if they had gone in their application and said, look, here's a thing that's going on, you know, and, you know, one of the things is if we do join the Federation, we would love some help on that. Picard would have 100% already been sending the team down, you know, even before they got, you know, the membership. And that would not have probably have barred them, because once they figured that out, I'm sure, you know, this kind of a technology could be adapted by the Federation into a less harmful and less destructive end. But, you know, I think he's the anger at the society is less for the fact that they have failed their veterans, but more for the fact that they're, I don't know, the kind of society who doesn't really seem to see that even as a problem. Because I don't think of it as they try to hide it from the Federation. He had, you know, the prime minister or whatever doesn't really.
It's not really that they were trying to hide it, but it was more that they weren't explaining it fully.
No.
They were sort of like, oh, this guy escaped. Can you help us? Okay. And then I guess they thought it wouldn't come out. I think it's more of what was happening.
They seem kind
of
like, I mean, and maybe that's it. They seem kind of like a kid who did something, who broke the lamp and put the pieces, you know, together and then just say, oh, this happened. I don't know. I wasn't in the room at the time, you know, and
frankly, I'm shocked that anybody thought that having the prime minister have a pencil thin mustache would make us feel in any way connected or sympathetic to him. He obviously is kind of a dick. So
yeah.
But I don't think that he's supposed to come across as a bad guy. I just think he's kind of a person who's in a little in over his head. I think that there's a sense that this planet, the Argosians, are kind of embarrassed by this even.
Well, they're a bunch of academics, really.
Yeah.
They're a bunch of academics who the war to them is like paperwork, you know. It's like, you know, it's just something that has to be done. And if we can get somebody else to do, you know, if we, you know, we need somebody to clean the toilets because we don't want to clean the toilets ourselves, and that's gross, but we don't really want to talk to the people who are cleaning the toilets. So, that's kind of there. So we're going to create this race of people who can create clean toilets, and that's going to be what we do. And we don't really talk to them. And it's so sad that they all smell like poop, but, you know, they have to live in that place.
Yeah, but
that's about as far as I think that's about as but I big think, of an issue they think of it.
But
as.
I think that, but I think there's a little bit of an issue there, which is that, you know, I think that analogy is sound as far as it goes, yeah. but I think you have to take that a step further. Yeah. Cleaning the toilet gives you terminal cancer, and they didn't tell the people that they were hiring as janitors that the cleaning the toilet was going to give you terminal cancer.
Yeah.
That's kind of the part that makes them complicit in this, I think.
Yeah. They didn't seem to think that they would want to go back. You know what I mean? I think that's even part of that. Like, they didn't really...
Yeah, which frankly I think is odd.
You have... I mean, but at the same time, the show isn't exactly... This franchise has been of the opinion that just science kind of wanton science is not necessarily a good thing. It needs to be applied towards a better principle, I believe. And maybe this is him saying, like, this is just, they made these super soldiers because they could, but they didn't think about the ethical responsibility they had towards their creations.
I think that's a fine way to put it. Absolutely. I do want to talk about the end of the episode because, you've got this pretty straightforward chase for like 35, 40 minutes.
Yeah.
And yeah, certainly you've got a couple of quiet scenes at the very beginning and sort of in the middle with Roga and talking to Troy and Data, which I think are really strong scenes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's all really interesting. What I like about the very end of the episode, and I think... Ooh. You know, this is an episode that I think is generally overlooked, and I even overlooked it, frankly. But I think this end is one of the clearest indications, and this is kind of the Next Generation throwing down the gauntlet and saying what the show and what the franchise is going to be about going into the 90s. Because if this was an episode of the original series... Kirk would have solved the problem.
Oh, yeah.
And he would have said, no, this is bad. You need to, you know, McCoy would have come up with some sort of, you know, shot that would have cured them and everything would have been fine. And that was very much in keeping with the general sense of American exceptionalism and sort of going around and solving the world's problems that the original series went with, you know?
Yeah.
It was kind of American empire building in a way. And what I find interesting about this episode in general and is that the very end of the episode is that is not what the Next Generation is about. That is not what the Federation is about in the 24th century.
Yeah.
And to go even further than that, it's kind of it's a different generation writing the show and the franchise at this point, and it's saying, you know, they see what's going on in the world. You know, we can't solve these problems. The Cold War kept going on for 20 years after the end of the original series. You have to kind of remember that when this was kind of happening, like the Cold War was, the Soviet Union was collapsing and the Berlin Wall had fallen and this kind of stuff was going on. And
it was over, but only by a couple of years.
Well, it wasn't even over. I mean, the Soviet Union didn't collapse until 1991. Mm. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, if you look at the way Europe was going, in a sense, I think this is kind of the show, even be not prescient in a way, because I think, you know, but if you look at the way, like, for example, the Bosnian conflict went, you know, in 95, 96, 94 timeframe, you sort of see like the problems of interventionism.
Yeah.
Were kind of self-evident at this point in history. And so this is the Next Generation kind of rejecting, I think, that original series interventionism in a way and kind of throwing down a gauntlet again and saying, no, this is not what this show is going to be about. This is very much more about you need to sort out your own shit and we will help you, but you need to fight your own battles. You need to figure out your own problems, and that's it. Now we're leaving.
You
goodbye.
Know, I think the original series, a lot of the cultures were kind of naive. Look at the Apple. It's you have Kirk knows better than this society, and they need somebody to, you know, most of the times there is a conflict. They need that outside perspective to tell them something that they don't necessarily know. But in this case, both the Prime Minister and the prisoners know exactly what needs to be done and know exactly why there are problems, and they know all of this. They have all the information. It's stubbornness that's keeping this conflict, really. I mean, it's the fact that the you know, the government doesn't want to deal with its own mess. The fact that it finds this distasteful, the fact that it, you know, coupled with the fact that, you know, these are people who are demanding in a way their rights and demanding proper treatment. And you have a government which is saying, well, it's a little more than we want to do in a way. But they know full well what's at stake. They know full well what they need to do. I don't think they don't need the Federation to, in a way, solve the problem for them. They may need them to mediate it just to, I mean, we've seen the Federation very happy to act as a mediator in ways when the, you know, when things are a little unclear or they need a negotiator. I mean, but it's the fact that they're, rather than dealing with this problem or admitting that they're having trouble with this problem, they're sweeping it under the rug. I think that's, yeah, that is much more of a, let's call it a 90s attitude.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think what you see in this episode is kind of the genesis of that attitude.
Yeah.
And it's something that you'll see the franchise do that, you know, continuing more and more. And I think the other thing that's interesting about that as well is that, you know, in the same way that the Argosian problem is a problem that is internal, right? Because he calls it a matter of internal security and Picard gets shut out, right? And Picard's kind of like, oh, that's how you want to play it? All right.
Yeah, I mean, he even says, like, that's what oppressive governments always say. Like,
yeah, which is a line that's a little too on the nose for me, but okay, we'll let it go. Because I don't get the sense that Argosia is necessarily a oppressive society or an oppressive government. I just think they're making a mistake in this one area.
I took that line to be more of a, you know, that line is a problematic line. This is a this is a trouble. You can't just, I think that's him trying to call him out and saying, like, look, you are sweeping this under the rug. If this is what you're saying, this is like,
don't
bullshit me. You know, you want to go there, you know, Nazi Germany called themselves, you know, internal security, you know?
Yeah. But I think, you know, I think what's interesting about this is if you can take it a step further and you can see, one of the problems with the Federation that a lot of the alien races kind of generally see, and I think this is something that you're starting to see a little bit, is that the Federation is viewed as naive in some respects. And this is also the show, I think, grappling with that as well, because the Federation is not naive. And the people that are in Starfleet are not naive. They're open. They're honest. They say what they mean, and they mean what they say. They will help you, but if you try and bullshit them, they're going to wipe their hands with you and go, you know what? You got to figure out your own shit. If you want to come back to us in 5 or 10 years and reapply for Federation membership, go right ahead. We will be there with open arms again. But we're not going to fix your problems for you.
I don't know. Maybe it is the fact that Kirk's general, and maybe Kirk wasn't unusual in that he was the guy who came down to a planet, fixed a problem, and then left, you know? And here's the terms that this is being fixed. Like, that may have been a very common attitude, and we have, you know, the people inside the Federation know what the past 100 years has been like and how things have changed, but, you know, cultures which may have had only fleeting contact with it, maybe they, I mean, the Federation may very well have the reputation of being this arrogant little cowboy. I mean, the Federation is...
Oh, they absolutely do.
Yeah, in many ways intended to be America coming in and, you know, in the 1960s, all right, we're going to save the day, and, you know, you have all these countries like, all right, good job, you know. Some days you'll get it right. All right, fine. You've got resources. I get that. You know, you're not a complete fuck up, but at the same time, like, you do go beyond your bounds. I mean, this is a slightly more mature Federation, a slightly, you know, maybe even a much more mature Federation. It's one that's more aware of things, and I don't think it has completely demonstrated that it's better. At least not in the eyes of many of the other people yet. And it's kind of working towards that.
I don't know that I would agree with that. And I don't think there's a lot of evidence in the show for that.
Okay.
Frankly.
Well, I'm just saying shit.
But I think we'll leave it there. I'll give this 7 something.
I will give it 8.
Okay. Let's move on to The High Ground, which is... less good than The Hunted.
I think that's a fair way of looking at it. I think this was one of the, I don't know, it's funny having come of age after, you know, post 9/11, because episode reads probably not completely differently than it did when it first aired, but at the same time,
Well, I think there's a couple ways you can go down this road. I think terrorism is terrorism.
And that's fair.
Every generation is going to have its own conceptions and its own sort of personal relationships with terrorism.
I guess
not to say that Richard and I are terrorists. We don't have a personal relationship with terrorism.
All right.
I'm just saying personal experiences. I don't know. Stop it.
Yeah. I thought it was more funny because it did seem to mirror all of that post 9/11.
If there's no Trek About episode next week, it's because Richard and I have been captured by the NSA.
I thought it was more funny that, you know, it seemed, you know, the dialogue in this episode did seem to mimic so much of that post 9/11, and whether it to me suggested more of a continuity between eras in a way that I liked in a way. I don't know, just from a historical perspective, people kind of view these things maybe similarly in some ways. I mean, the question about how a society deals with violent crime is, you know, how it deals with terrorism. How do you deal with this with a very strong hand? Because this is a genuinely bad thing. And, you know, attempting to address this problem diplomatically isn't working. But at the same time, how do you deal with this in a way which creates kind of an out for these people? Do you know what I mean?
I do. I understand what you mean. And I actually think it's really interesting in conjunction with your, you know, sort of like this reads differently in a post 9/11 world, because you mentioned that you can't treat this as violent crime. And one of the things that is very different about our conception of terrorism post 9/11 is that we're not treating it as violent crime. We are treating it as an act of war. And we will send, you know, hundreds of thousands of soldiers to foreign countries in an attempt to root out terrorism in a way that we would not have done before 9/11.
Yeah.
So this episode is almost quaint in a way, because this is not something that is threatening their way of life. This is not something where they're treating this as a military problem. This is something that they're treating as a crime problem.
Well, here's the thing.
And it's very cute, almost.
I think it's funny that it's suggesting that, you know, this episode is, in a way, it's less about the problem of terrorism in our society, but how do we deal with societies where terrorism is a thing? Because let's face it, before 9/11, there were not terrorist attacks going on American soil in that same way. Do you know what I mean?
There certainly were.
There certainly were, yes. But at the same time, this is talking about – it's talking about interventionism. How do we deal with other countries in which they have – terrorism going on every day? Do we stop that?
Let's stop dancing around this.
Yes.
This is talking about Ireland, basically.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I don't think it works very well, because this is not, like, you know, obviously Irish terrorism was terrible and the IRA was terrible and blowing, you know, children up was terrible and all those things. But to be very facile about it, but, you know, like, and certainly I think it's interesting that this episode was banned in the United Kingdom for many years and Ireland for many years. But what I think doesn't work about it is that it's a very confused episode, because it doesn't really seem to know what it's about. It's saying, yes, terrorism is bad and we need to treat it like this. And these people have this problem and these people have this problem. And, but they're also good people and they're just caught up in bad circumstances and this and that and the other thing, but they're using bad tactics to do this. But it's like, come on, make a decision.
I don't think they really ever make it. They don't really do much towards making the terrorists sympathetic. There is this guy, Finn, who is, the name just clicked for me because I'm an idiot. But yes, he's charismatic. We see exactly why he's the leader of this group. I mean, I don't think it's. I think he is the kind of people that, you know, gets people to follow him, whether it's through, you know, fear or, you know, through inspiration, whatever. At the, you know, he can draw well and he's vaguely nice at certain points.
He's
to
vaguely
Dr. Crusher,
charming.
And
he's sort of attractive.
That's about as far as they go. And even Picard points out to Dr. Crusher several times, like, look, you're getting Stockholm syndrome here. Like, you need to not do this. And I think she doesn't disagree with that. And I think you see after they have that conversation, she interacts with Finn very differently, because you can see her starting to get caught up or starting to feel bad for him, or realizing, you know, well, he really, you know, he seems to think I'm really beautiful, and he's and her realizing, no, but he's still an asshole, you know.
Well, like, and that's what I think sort of the problem with this episode is, and why I don't think it's very good is that it's kind of afraid to, or it refuses to engage with the questions it's raising, and
it doesn't give us. There is no legitimate reason for why they turn to terrorism. It seemed like this is
as anything, it's sort of a space analogy for the Ireland situation where they want their own independent state, and that's that's what the IRA was sort of fighting for, a united Ireland. They wanted Northern Ireland to not be a part of the United Kingdom. Which obviously they did not succeed at. But, and then I think that's all fine. I mean, I think, if you want to set up a sort of space Ireland to have this sort of conversation, that's okay.
They already had a space Ireland. It was a lot of fun.
I don't know what it is about Melinda Snodgrass and space Ireland. But on the other hand, it's like they don't seem to ever really engage with the moral ambiguity of the situation in any way. They don't seem to point to portraying the terrorists as sympathetic, as you point out. They don't seem to point out that the security forces are sympathetic in any way either.
I mean, to a degree,
the other thing is too, is that, Riker is working with the security force, woman, the head of the security forces, and there's nothing there. There's no meat there. They have conversations that you forget about in five minutes because they're not saying anything.
Here's the thing. The episode needed to show that this was a group of sympathetic people who had a sympathetic cause or a legitimate cause who perverted that cause by turning it to violence. I mean, that scene when the cop says, like, look, they bombed this bus of school children and they wanted to bomb a police bus. That wouldn't, as if that would make it okay. Like, it's a case of, even given their best intentions, they still intended to bomb and kill people in order to get what they want. And this is a show that definitely agrees that that does not make your cause legitimate. That actually ruins your cause to a degree. We don't see the government doing anything that's that terrible. So it rounds up everybody. I thought the implication was that it's this very small group. They have on their entire planet, they can find 5,000 people that, dealing with that they're suspected of. And they say it's about 200 people total and they know all of their names. I mean, I got the sense that, and again, here we are.
Yeah, but how many people do you think were in the IRA?
Of course. And here we are dealing with a post 9/11, society where we are, we do have problems with the NSA doing exactly that. Not have problems with the NSA doing exactly that.
Well, I think what you're forgetting, of course, is that, and this is something you've criticized me for doing in the past, which is just you kind of have to look past the fact that Star Trek is going to have the one town stand in for the entire country or the entire world. There's a degree to which that you just have to go with it, or else the episode's not going to work. I don't think that's why the episode doesn't work. I'm fine with that because I think, in the sense that Northern Ireland is a very small part of a very small island.
No, that's fair.
The entire population of the Irish state is what, like 6 million people?
Well, my question is, what is the state doing on this planet that is so bad?
They wouldn't let them be independent. I mean, that's basically it. I mean, what?
And we don't know what this group was when they first started the independence. I mean, they said,
we don't have any. We don't have any context.
She says at one point they wanted independence, and we said no, and that gave them a cause to rally around. It's implied that they had. I mean, maybe this was a group that had been causing. What if this was a local, let's say, a mafia type group that decided it wanted to be its own state because the laws of the government were.
Oh yeah, I'm
like
not...
it could have just as easily been that, and they said no, we're not giving you information, and then they say, well, now we're a nationalist group.
You're preaching to the choir here. Yeah, I don't think this is a very confused episode. I guess enough context for us to really take any consideration from this one way or the other.
The state is a lot more sympathetic than the terrorists are, which is. Not necessarily.
I think it is a problem
for what this episode wants to be. I mean, when Riker is saying, like, aren't you being hard? And she's saying, when I first, and she's like, I used to think I was very, very, very moderate, and she almost finds that funny that he's, and she's saying, like, look, this, I've seen shit. I had to deal with the bodies of school children that these people killed. Like, I have to, I am seeing this every single day, and I know how bad they are. And no matter how much you like them and how sympathetic their cause may be or how noble their goals may be, what they are doing is so wrong that it's inexcusable.
I mean, I think honestly that this would have been a much stronger episode if they had gone from a different perspective, and instead of trying to tack on some sort of Ireland message, they use sort of South Africa as a model for this episode, or maybe Israel, yeah, Palestine or something, because, you know, they did have that line in the episode that sort of, I think we both forgot about, which is that they were something about they were keeping this group of people down, like politically or something. And so I kind of got sort of an apartheid read from that.
Fair.
But I don't think that they do anything with that. There's no evidence for that in the episode. They don't look different, right?
I would say they're wearing purple outfits. That's the only difference.
The only thing that they seem to do in the episode, which is kind of strange, is that Finn has a patch of gray in his hair, and some of the other people, including some of the children, have patches of gray in their hair.
Yeah,
so we supposed to assume that is why they were being kept? I mean, you know, there's
because
no...
they didn't like their hairstyle. I mean, there's precedents in society.
Yeah, I mean, you
no,
know...
like, I mean, yeah, there's supposed to be some. I got the sense there was some vague, but yeah, they didn't. I can see why this show didn't want to, you know, do that on a racial basis or anything like that, sure. But at the same time, like, yeah, we aren't given any...
But there are ways to do that,
There is no indication of what makes this group of terrorists different. As far as we know, it's just a bunch of assholes who decided to get together. Like,
yeah,
They don't say they're fighting for... That they are an ethnic group that's fighting for their independence.
Right.
They don't say, oh, well, it's a religious group that, you know, is not allowed to... Like, if it were something like that, when anybody could say, well, you know, that's right, this is a state legitimately encroaching on their freedoms.
Right.
But we aren't told what they're encroaching upon, and as far as I can tell, it seems almost like they just didn't want to follow the rule of law.
Yeah.
And we've seen what the episode the other week with the Sovereign and that girl who was poisoning and these tribal wars and all of that. I mean, you have that is an ethnic group that is pushed out, and you see a society, you know, and they are considered terrorist within their thing, but you have a government that's eventually willing to work with that and figuring out, all right, well, how do we all become one? This is, you know, it's not, that doesn't seem to be the case here, because if it was, I don't know, it doesn't seem like they have any legitimacy to their claim.
Right. And I think bringing up the vengeance factor also points, yes, out the fact that this is the kind of the third episode, you know, in as many weeks that is dealing with this sort of problem. And it's like, what were you guys thinking? Like, you've got the vengeance factor, you've got the hunted, now you've got the high ground. It's all sort of the same thing in a way. And there's just this lump of episodes in the middle of the season for some reason that are dealing with outcasts of society.
And they all have the same title.
And they all sort of have the same title. So it's like, you know.
I mean, you can get why Star Trek likes dealing with the outcasts of society, sure. But
it just seems
out of
like,
the spate we've had, this is one of the weaker ones.
It seems like they probably should have, you know, pushed this script to like a few weeks down the line and worked on it a little more, basically.
Yeah, that sounds right. They needed to. The terrorists don't work because they're boogeymen through the entire episode for the most part.
And frankly, they're also bad at this. I mean, what justification? I mean, they tried to Finn tried to explain this in some way, you know, but why try and blow up the Enterprise exactly? And why do you want to bring the Federation into this exactly? Like, what are you going to get out of this?
I mean, he's saying that they're dealing with the planet in a way that's... He essentially is blaming the Federation for supporting the government, which supports the war against terror. That's essentially what he's saying. And he's saying, you know, if you guys would keep out of this, this would be between the two of us, you know, but you're he is accusing the Federation of intervening in a way which,
but do you know,
whether that's right or not,
but
he is.
I think he's wrong, and I'll tell you exactly why he's wrong. The Federation was responding to the call for you know,
yes,
for medical assistance. If the terrorist also contacted the Enterprise and asked for medical assistance, I think the Enterprise
doesn't
would have given
Dr.
it to them.
Dr. Crusher say that?
Yeah.
She does exactly say that.
And it's, again, it's a thing where believe the Federation. Like, they're not the bad guys.
But again, yeah.
They'll help you. They're not going to take sides. They'll help both of you. And
but
yeah,
again, maybe the Federation in these kind of – I mean, we are – it's not necessarily, these aren't necessarily galaxy backwaters, but in a way they may not, you know, if they're not in the Federation, they may not be, if it, this is an independent planet, they might not be keeping up on the day-to-day of the Federation.
They do make a point of saying at the very beginning of this episode that the planet is not aligned, but isn't all that important.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the idea that the Federation could very easily give help to both sides without causing any issues because it's the Federation.
But we're not
talking about the Federation aiding a terrorist group on Romulus, for example.
No.
That would legitimately be bad. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think the closest to a motive, and this could, again, this is another, we are poking holes in this episode, and I'm liking it a lot less that we're talking about it. This group, all they know of the Federation is that, you know, oh, they'll come and they'll give aid. But the Federation doesn't seem to really be that aware of it until this is happening. All they get is a call saying, you know, we need supplies. We've got a terrorist attack.
Right.
Okay, we're going to help you. You know, they hadn't really heard about this issue beforehand. And so they've never talked. If they had simultaneous distress calls, yeah.
And frankly, you know, at the end of the day, this episode is confused about what it's trying to say. It doesn't really say anything. And it ends by ending. Like
it tries to go with that, you know, you need to stop having this resentment. And they say, you know, yes, you know, here we have, you know,
because you've got the very end of the episode where the security chief kills Finn. And then, you know, she says, oh, you didn't have to kill him. And then the child comes up and they're saying, no more killing today. And it's like, oh, right. You know, I get it. You're trying, you know, but you're trying to make some sort of moral equivalency here. And that's fine.
But then is that saying you need to kill the leaders and let the kids hopefully will be better?
So
that's
well, no, we saw that didn't work because we saw Miri way back in the original series.
Having
kids in charge and killing all the adults doesn't work either.
This is kind of the opposite of, at least, you know, the vengeance factor, where they have, you know, they are telling her like, look, you need to not keep fighting. And she does. And, you know, that keeps the resentment, you know.
Yeah.
And this is saying that, you know, sometimes, yes, you will listen to reason and they will put down the gun. I mean, it ends on an optimistic note, but one that's maybe not earned. That kid doesn't even have a fucking line. All we know is, you know what I mean? Like, he wasn't even paid for speaking.
Right, right. What do you think about Dr. Crusher in this episode? Because we've kind of talked about her a couple times. She hasn't really done anything this season. And so this is her first episode.
Yeah,
basically.
And she's interesting.
Are you happy to have her back now that she's having more to do?
I don't know. I still miss Pulaski. I like Pulaski a lot better. I think their Crusher is interesting. I guess on terms of which one would I want to hang out with, you know, I would. I think Pulaski would be a lot of fun to go and grab a beer with. I think she would tell you some really interesting stories. She'd have a lot of great conversations. She'd be good. Dr. Crusher is a lot less, I don't know, personable in a way.
Yeah.
I like that she's always willing to kind of, I don't know, there's a degree to which she ignores everything in favor of saving a life. You know, we've seen this before. She will ignore every, you know, she'll break every oath but the Hippocratic, and that trumps everything. She will risk her own life for this. You know,
she's a Hippocrat. Okay, never mind.
I loved that line when Riker says, you know, when Picard's like thinking at the very beginning, when Picard's thinking of beaming her up, and Riker's like, I'm not explaining it. I'm not talking to her. Like, you know, because he knows that, you know, if you come between a Crusher and a dying patient, you are going to be in sick bay yourself. Like, that's.
Yeah, it paints her out to be a very capable person and a very, I think, compassionate person.
Yes, at the same time. I mean, this episode does make it clear that, like, you know, when Picard and she are talking and he says, you know, I should have pulled you back. And she said, oh, I shouldn't have, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done that. Like, I think they are acknowledging that, as wonderful as that sounds. It's great that the doctor is willing to risk life and limb to save anybody. And she doesn't really care who they are. You know, she sees blood. She's going to fix it. That is a problem on some places. I mean, she is in a way a little reckless.
I mean, I suppose so, but I think you want your doctors to be that way, well, frankly. And I also think that the issue with Crusher in this episode is more that she wasn't given the sort of character building in the second season that everybody else got.
Yeah.
You know, everybody else in the second season kind of got their one or two episodes to go, okay, this is what we're doing now. And she didn't really get that opportunity. And so this is the first time we've had a Crusher-centric episode in, I think, ever. because certainly the first season wasn't interested in character development in any way, really.
No.
And, you know, we don't know who she is, except that she's a doctor who wants to heal people. And
I mean, at the same time, we see, I don't know, she's a little more, I guess I want to, I don't necessarily want to say military than Pulaski, but I mean, you see her completely stonewalling this guy, and I figure I would
say that she's more military than Pulaski.
Yeah, I think Pulaski would have been. I mean,
did you notice that little thing in the very beginning of the episode where she's like, "No, that's an order, Worf. Get the fuck out of here."
She's. You know, I can see. Wasn't there when Pulaski was taken by Moriarty? She's trying to get, you know, she gets as much information as she can out of somebody. She would not have stonewalled this guy. You know, she would have been trying to, you know, worry about, you know, Crusher doesn't even give her name.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like the scene when she's saying, look, you know, I'm, you know, which she admits that she's terrified of him, but in a way which takes all of his power away from him. I mean, I do like that.
Right.
Like she is good in this kind of a situation. She doesn't really do anything wrong. She, you know, once she's captured, she acts as a prisoner in a very good way. The mild Stockholm syndrome, which she works on once it's pointed out to her aside.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so far what we know about her, I guess.
At the end of the day,
she doesn't get to tell Picard that Wesley's his son.
Oh God, do we really need to talk about Wesley?
Oh, and she's just like, I need to talk to you, Picard. I'm like, she's finally going to confess it. And then the lights go out. So this is my fan theory.
All right. That's a good fan theory. I'll go with that. Let's retcon that a little bit. I'll give it 4. It was fine.
I think the fact that we didn't talk about these transporter things that they have at all, and we kind of don't want to, makes me give it a 3 even. Like, it had too many plots, and it didn't know what to do with any of them.
I think that's a fine summation of this episode. Well, join us next week when we talk about Deja Q and A Matter of Perspective. We're out of the's.
Yeah, I'm so glad. Deja Q is so much better.
We'll see you then.